Hello, and welcome to this episode of That's What She Said, which we are recording live, motherfuckers. I have on the phone Nat Moser, who is amazing and wonderful. Natalie comes to us from California, and she's been around for a number of years. I've known about her. Photographer and a speaker and a writer and a yogi, and I'm actually her Facebook friend, and I watched as she was diagnosed with cancer, and then her posts didn't turn like horribly sad or tragic or into photos of her just with an IV looking pathetic and sort of begging for help. And I'd never seen anyone do that before. So I was like, well, if there's anyone who's going to talk about how bad times can turn you into a beam of light, and talk to us about what can happen in the Trump administration, I thought she would be a good choice. So, hi.
Hi, Kristen. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. How would you you? How would you introduce you and what you do in this world, aside from my very vague rambling?
Oh, no, you did pretty well. You know, it's funny because I've done so many things in my life. Currently, you know, mom is one of the big things and wife, but yogi and yoga instructor, being able to lead other people kind of along, you know, in their days and little moments and big moments is a big part. You know, being a photographer is a big deal to me, too, being able to document people's stories. I find that I'm really a storyteller, and that's part of the way that I really approached my cancer journey was to see it kind of daily as what is the story and, you know, how does it all fit together?
Rad. So my first question, I had to send her a list of questions, guys, and the first question was in all caps, how the fuck did you do cancer so beautifully? So that's, you know, a small question for you.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. No, I mean, you know, cancer sucks, first of all. And one of the things that's challenging is that, you know, my way of approaching things kind of innately is from an optimistic viewpoint. And so moving through that space of cancer, recognizing that it's something that I would never, ever have imagined would happen to me. I don't know how I could imagine myself to be immune to it, but I was not. But to look at this space and go, okay, what am I going to do now? I have the choice on how I approach this journey. And for me, it was so important to really set my intention, and my yoga really helped me with that. I was able to really choose the words that I would use to move forward on that journey. And the first thing that I did when talking about it was say that I was going to move towards healing in lieu of trying to establish battleground. For me, choosing those healing words contained so much energy. And for me, moving in that healing direction in lieu of a fighting, you know, lexicon. So that's what was initially so important to me. And then having all of my support structure around me was amazing. But also, you know, ultimately understanding that what I initially saw to be horrendous and an awful situation ultimately proved to be an opportunity. And so my goal was to keep reframing my situation in a way where I could find gratitude for what I had, try to see the opportunity in the challenges, and then try to take my people in with me along that journey, and then to really move forward with love and compassion for myself and for those around me. And that's really ultimately what worked for me with everything, especially, you know, my husband's mom, she died of pancreatic cancer when she was 39. My husband was 17 at the time. You know, I initially was so upset that he had to deal with this type of thing again. And for my kids, I was so upset that they were 5 and 7 at the time of my diagnosis, that they were going to have to work through something like this, which to me just seemed, you know, that's not what I wanted for their story. But, you know, after a little while of processing through everything, I realized that perhaps we're all in training all the time for the arcs of our stories. And, you know, my husband was in training with his mom. I am now and have always been in training for this moment, and who knows about for the next. My children are undergoing training right now with the situation where they're able to, through their suffering, develop compassion. And who am I to know what the training is all for in the long run? And if we can keep seeing that, then we can keep stepping forward with the idea that if we keep noticing, paying attention, having gratitude, that we're just getting ready to meet the thing that's put before us in the best way possible.
Well, damn.
I hope I'm not talking too much.
No. We're in training for the arcs of our stories. It's such a good, strong way to handle whatever comes, good or bad, without making it good or bad. Just it's training for that. This is happening. That's such a beautiful way to do it and to reframe absolutely all of it.
You know, can I add one thing, Kristen? Because, you know, I went all through this cancer journey last year, and it's been quite a journey. And this last week, I actually had the opportunity to speak at an event with like 700 people talking again about my journey and how I was able to find kind of light in the cracks of the journey, and allowing myself to highlight those cracks and finding the beauty in them allowed me to move forward. Well, I came home and then found out that my friends, one of my best friend's daughters has leukemia. She's 7. She was diagnosed this week. And it's my best friend's daughter. And it's my daughter's best friend as well. And in that moment again, I was like, what is this? And how can this be again, right? And then I'm, you know, kind of sat back down in my seat. And, you know, all the things that I put into these nice little boxes in the rearview mirror are now right in this moment again, as they are every day. But again, it was all reinforced that perhaps even all the things that my kids went through last year, which I thought we were, you know, through, were in fact moments of training to prepare them to deal with their friends' sickness and healing, and to find a way to ultimately normalize our challenges, right? We don't want to normalize things to where they just, you know, oh, there we go again. But more so to realize that challenge and struggle is part of our lives. And as much as we want to protect each other from them, we can't. One of the philosophies that has helped me through all of this too was Thich Nhat Hanh's idea of the lotus flower growing in the mud. Because without the mud, the lotus flower... Sorry. Without the mud, the lotus flower is unable to actually attach and to grow. We need the challenges in our lives to be able to kind of dig in and reach up towards the light. Without those challenges, without that mud, we don't have that possibility. So it just really, even though it's muddy and dirty, it is also what leads to the beauty in life.
Yeah. So how did you get to the place where, first off, 7 year olds with leukemia, if that just never happened again, I would be okay with those lotuses never blooming.
So would I. And that's another challenge too, is like with all this like philosophical stuff, it's hard because sometimes things just suck and you can't talk around that. And there's nothing that I can say to make that better. And it's not okay. It makes me so sad. But still, even in those horrible moments, what are we going to do, right? How can we come together?
Yeah, and what a beautiful ally for her to have on her side and you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I imagine it's horrifying to have cancer as a 7-year-old, but at least she has you.
And at least her daughter saw me go through everything, you know, losing my hair and seeing it grow back. There's so much symbolism in that to me. And I don't know from a 6 or 7 year old's perspective if that all translates, but I feel like, you know, it's there, even if they can't completely conceptualize everything. It's all there. And I hope that she sees the triumph in the coming back, you know, and the hair being lost and it coming back and and in me being able to smile through much of it, if not all of it.
Yeah, that was, you've done a remarkable job of that. Just watching you from afar, I've been like, oh my God, she's doing this so well. She's got life figured out. It appears from afar.
Thanks.
So on an everyday level, how do you wake up and face the day in terms of routine and ritual? Kind of what are the systems that keep you going?
Yes. Well, the primary thing that I do before I wake up, or not before I wake up, before I get up, is I try to, before I reach for my phone, number one, because that's my my natural tendency, is to want to grab it to find out what's going on. So I've tried to mediate that by trying to think of at least three things every morning that I am grateful for. And I try to have them be things that were kind of, I hate to say fresh, but not just my, you know, obviously I'm thankful for my family and those things, but something more specific. I try to go through my day from the day before, maybe of like an interaction that happened or just anything that occurred, and find three things that I'm grateful for. And I find that by doing that, number one, it kind of puts a pause on everything in my day. It helps me rewire for the day ahead. And before I start looking at the news and, you know, people's Facebook posts and various other things, I have already established and set an intention of gratitude for the day. And that really, just for me, has been amazing in really choosing to pause, find gratitude, and step forward with that.
Yeah, letting gratitude frame your day is a pretty rad way to be.
Yeah, that's been the primary.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing, especially with what you're going through right now and what you have been through and all of it. I've also noticed that you are doing a lot of, like, activist-y type things, and I was wondering how you balance being grateful and being so calm and loving and kind and yogic, to not have a better word for it. Fired up and on fire about all of the other things that are happening in the world that are by no means beautiful or helpful or lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that has been a very hard thing for me, and also an amazing thing. It's such a mixed bag. You know, on November 9th, when I woke up, you know, I was devastated, and my children came in the room and asked me who won, and they were crying. And so that's where our family was on that day. But stepping forward from there, from that pit of despair, which I felt, you know, I did acknowledge actually with my community that I felt more despair on November 9th than I felt the whole year prior with my cancer journey, which was interesting to me to notice for myself.
Yeah.
Because it was a little surprising to me that I felt that way, but it was true. And I think I shared that, and a lot of people, I think, maybe appreciated it but didn't understand that. But one thing I noticed in my cancer journey was that, you know, I don't need to pretend or anything. I can just be honest in who I really am, and that's one of the gifts that I received. And I can acknowledge my place in the family of things as someone who has a voice. And for those who want to listen, I want to share that voice. And so with everything that happened, I felt a huge burst of energy amidst the despair. And I have also found that I really need to pay attention to where my energy is. And I sat in the car with my husband, and I was literally like vibrating with energy. And I was like, there's a reason that I feel this way. And I don't know exactly what role I will play moving forward with all of this. But to me, this situation in our country is an opportunity to, you know, to stand up for what I believe in for my children. And one of the conversations that we had that morning as everybody was crying on November 9th, was my children asked, you know, is things about the wall and keeping out the bad people is what they heard some stories about, and they were crying about that. And I let them know that all they needed to do, because I feel like one of my big roles right now is in being their parent, all that they need to do was to continue to do what they were already doing and be kind and caring and compassionate and look out for those people that might not be taken care of, and to take care of them, and that they could leave everything else to mom and dad, and that we live in a beautiful and amazing country where we have the opportunity to assemble, to stand up for our rights, and to work together towards a more perfect union, that we would have the opportunity to protest if need be, and that the wall would not be built. And if it was, that we would stand up in defense of all that we hold valuable and honorable in our country. And the sad thing was, is that my son said, but what if you go to jail? And in that moment, let me tell you, I've always been the rule follower, which is funny, the straight A student, the one that wants to do the right thing. And I still want to do the right thing. But what I realized in that moment was, when he said that, was I would be willing to do that. And it's not that I want to do that, but that it is, I want to honor my children by standing up to do what is right. And if I feel very much so that I know what is right, and if that is the consequence, that I want to model for my children doing the right thing. And then in the end, it is more important for them to have me as a parent who, of course, on a day-to-day basis with them, we talk about all of the things, but I want them to see me doing the things and standing up for the things that we share as our family values and our, and for me, our country's values as well.
And what has shifted in you from that point on November 9th that is almost purely despair until now, into February, like more than 2 weeks into Trump's office, so it feels like years. What changes played out in you?
Well, I had to, first things first, go from, like you mentioned, you know, being, over the last year, I've kind of found myself in the role of being someone who's been inspiring to a lot of people. Being a yoga teacher, I find that my role tends to be, you know, more kind of in that category or box. And it's been interesting to acknowledge where the loving, inspiring person can then have to move forward in radical truth and honest love, and what that looks like. And it doesn't always look like prettiness and flowers. Sometimes it looks like standing up for people, standing up with people. You know, I went to the Women's March here in Orange County, which was one of the smaller ones. But let me tell you, when I showed up to be there in unity with people who were standing up for all sorts of reasons, that were some of the kindest people that I've ever been around, to feel that energy and love was something truly beautiful. So what I've tried to do from that space is to really identify my values. And one of those is to stand up in education, information. So I know I have some more time than some of my friends and some other folks out there to logically go through the news, let's say. So I go through, I read people's posts, I try to go and research and fact check and come into conversations from a place of thoughtfulness, compassion, and truth. And I find that every time I try to do that, hopefully, even though I've been unfriended a number of times in the last few weeks, I can have enough people who will look at that and say, what is her intention? What is my intention? You know, maybe I should question something. I want people to move forward in curiosity. And my part of my goal is to help people come into that place where they can say, maybe I think a certain way, but what if I thought about it a little differently? Or where am I getting my information from? I find that that's a real opportunity for me. Another one is to really encourage people to take a challenging moment like we're in and see the fracture in our country as an opportunity. And I really do believe that the crack is the place that the light gets in. We have an opportunity right now to engage, to pay more attention. I can tell you that before all of this happened, I honestly did not pay attention all the time to what was happening locally. And now I am trying to. It's still very overwhelming and we can't do everything. But what we can do is look, open our eyes, not pretend that things are not happening around us, really acknowledge our privilege and then step forward and keep taking the next best step forward. And that's what I'm trying to encourage people to do. But one thing I know from my cancer journey is you can't pretend things away. You have to step forward into them, and you have to do so with vulnerability, with love and compassion, but with your truth. And if you dim your truth and don't walk forward acknowledging the reality of things, then we cannot evolve and step forward into a new and better landscape for our country.
Yes, and pretending things away is so much easier. And Obama, I think one of his gifts is that he just gave us the feeling that it was all handled.
Yes, totally, 100%.
Don't worry about this. I got this.
Yeah. And, you know, we had the opportunity to go to Washington, D.C. in October with our family. And I'll tell you, that was an inspiring journey, because to be able to see Mount Vernon and to be able to go to the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial and, you know, it made everything that much more real to see the Oval Office and to see – those things are real. You know, we talk about them from afar, but it helped to really kind of close that divide and make it that much more important for me to step forward right now and really encourage my fellow citizens to do the same. You know, I am only one, but collectively we can really make an impact. And that's not only with our government, but it's just with our day-to-day. You know, every time that we step forward and we don't name call each other and we try to have conversations where we are working towards trying to understand, we can continually build a bridge towards one another. And in moments, you know, it's one block in the bridge after another, and there's going to be blocks that get pushed down, but we have an opportunity in every moment to keep trying.
Yes. Yes, we do. We do. And it doesn't have to be all fear and anger and divisiveness and conquering. And I think that when you talked about moving forward healing in your cancer instead of fighting, but that's so helpful for framing what's happening in politics right now, is that if we can move toward healing instead of using that same language of fighting, we will have come so far so quickly. In terms of seeing the other side and engaging with them and engaging with everyone who's stuck in this country, whether we like it or not, because Canada's not taking us right now. So
you're right. Well. And I think we just really need to show up for each other in person, too. And I think that's another piece. And I'm fortunate to have my, you know, friends, obviously, but my yoga community and even showing up in local civic action, you know, in groups like that has really been a big deal for me right now, and very important, because when we show up in front of each other, we remember our humanity and that we are really people and not just words on a screen.
Yes, it's so much easier to love people when they're in front of you.
It is.
And so what would you say is the biggest gift of this this brave new world that we live in? And I would say, from listening to you, it sounds like you used to play at volume, like medium loud, and now you're like cranked all the way up and having a fucking block party.
I am. I am. I am. I will tell you that I feel one of the biggest gifts from this for me is I've always tried to find and understand my purpose, and I feel like it adjusts all the time. But like I said, I noticed where my energy was right now, and I'm listening. And I know that I don't know exactly what my role in the story is, but I'm going to keep showing up in that space and allow myself to be used and my gifts to be used in the best way possible. And so, I am speaking out. I am showing up, civically and in yoga and in my parenting. And honestly, I think that is one of the biggest gifts too, is we've had so many conversations as a family over this last year, starting with the election. And a lot of my friends did not have these conversations. And, it was a conversation that my husband and I had of like, how much are we going to talk about here? And we really tried to, manage it based upon the developmental ages of our children and just who they are and who we are as a family. But it's brought up the opportunity to really discuss our values. And for me to really realize that my activism is certainly, it's social. It's on social media. It's with my feet on the ground. It's with my contributions financially. It's with more so, though, around our kitchen table, the conversations that we have here. I want to encourage, and we want to encourage our children to be able to reason through conversations, to be able to debate, to realize that we can have different outlooks, maybe even different values with different people, but still love them. But that they, mm-hmm. if they're going to have a conversation and debate, that they have to have reasoning behind it. I've had my kids come home and say something about our current president and that hasn't been very kind, but they don't have any reasoning behind it. And I will stop them in their tracks and say, why do you say that? Give me a reason or don't say it. If you want to have a conversation, let's go research that. Let's figure it out. But don't just say something just because you kind of want to parrot it or want to join the team or join the club that's going to bash somebody. I want you to have reasons. Let's talk about what we're going to do as a family. How are we going to act instead of just like, I don't like somebody and I'm not even going to tell you why. So it's given us an opportunity to really work through with them who we are. And they might have different, they understand our family values. In the long run, they might have different values as an individual. And that's up to them. But the thing is, I hope that they'll be able to be committed to those values, to reason with them, and to be able to recognize that, in love, we can still come together and reasonably talk about those things so we can work towards a better country. And I don't want them to live in fear, and I think that's where they were on November 9th, and it's probably where I was too. But moving forward now, we move forward in the idea that we are part of this long arc of history, and we don't know how we are part of it. We don't know exactly what role we're taking or what role we're playing, but we know that we have to show up fully because it's our obligation to do so.
Absolutely. And speaking of showing up fully, what would you say are the simple daily actions that make all the difference to your full humanity? So showing up as a full and complete human instead of a sort of...
Yes.
Vagabond.
This is challenging. So let's see, what are the simple daily actions? Well, for me, it's definitely like we talked about, showing up in gratitude every morning before I reach for the phone. And it's sad that that's even part of it is the reaching for the phone, but it is part of the reality. Mm-hmm. Showing up in gratitude before I connect, loving my family. If I get to do those gratitude moments, normally somebody's climbing into bed with me, so I'm still trying to get through the three before they climb into bed. Really spending quality time with my kids and my husband and allowing myself to not be perfect. It's challenging being a yoga teacher and a mom because when I'm out yelling at the kids, everyone's like, oh, what's she doing? So allowing myself to not, I'm not perfect in any way. And that's okay. I just keep doing my best. And then I think hopefully modeling that for the kids too. Another thing is for me is finding the beauty in things, which, my photography and the yoga for me really try to do too. I listen to tons of music. I'm constantly creating playlists for yoga, which is helpful for me, but learning about new musicians and listening to songs that, you know, really connect with my energy. Also reading poetry. Over the year that I was, you know, going through my cancer journey, I read a lot of poetry. And I honestly, prior to that, hadn't done a whole lot of that. And so that was something that was really opening for me, because it allowed me to kind of be able to articulate better the beauty in the challenges, I think. And another thing is listening to podcasts and reading. One of the podcasts that I listened to before everything happened and continue to listen to is On Being by mm-hmm. Krista Tippett. And it's funny, I was interviewed a while back about, you know, who were the people that really helped to support me through my cancer journey. And I mentioned, you know, all of very close friends and family and my husband and my doctors, and they were all amazing. And then I was almost laughing in apology and like, can I have to say one more? And I said, it's Krista Tippett. Because listening to her podcast have truly helped me along my journey, whether it was just, you know, the ability to have conversations with people who have different mindsets than me or different ways of looking at the world spiritually. One of the particular people had Bruce Kramer. He had talked about his battle with ALS and how he saw it as a gift. That particular one, you know, stayed with me. And so I look to podcasts like Krista's for inspiration and for healing, and to find, to kind of step out of myself and see the world through different people's eyes. And she has such a great way of asking good questions that really make me think. So I listen to her regularly. And then the other thing is just, you know, I try to do one thing every day that I feel engaged with civically, whether it's making a call to my congressman or senator, you know, about something that's happening. And I found that I didn't realize how much we can have an impact in big ways from little actions. So that's felt, it's made me feel really good, because I know I'm able to engage more from the pulpit of my phone. And what a great opportunity to do that. And then just honestly to have fun. I mean, we still have to have time to have a good time, to meet up with people for coffee, to not talk about all of this stuff too, so that way we can clear some space in our brains and our hearts, so that way there's still room to then move forward in all of those right actions.
Yes, because joy is an act of resistance. They want you
yes,
to be miserable.
It is.
Trump is the most miserable of all. So,
I know, I know. And actually, that's one other thing is that there's the Book of Joy, which is from the Dalai Lama and the Reverend Desmond Tutu. Absolutely incredible book, and it has helped articulate for me so many of the things that I had in my mind throughout my journey. Of a lot of it is gratitude and reframing, and being able to find the purpose in things, even when they are seemingly dark and terrible, there's always something to gain in that moment.
Yes. I have both of those books on my nightstand right now, The Book of Joy and The Tippet Becoming Wise. So
yes.
I feel you.
Oh, I love it.
Are there any other websites, humans, or media streams that are like, please share that they just inspire you the most as the days roll on?
No, probably those would be it for the inspiration. You know, I'm spending so much time now. Actually, one other thing from Krista Tippett is her Civil Conversations Project, which is encouraging people to get in front of people again and have an opportunity to discuss challenging topics in a structured way. And actually, I'm trying to get a group together locally so we can have these types of conversations that are not partisan, but hopefully face-to-face, and really trying to find a way to reweave that fabric locally. And then for me, it's not necessarily inspirational streams, but honestly, just real news. you know, I'm doing a lot of reading of the New York Times, the Washington Post. Dan Rather has been a great voice of reason, and I think a signpost of someone who has years of wisdom of watching and understanding how things connect. And it's been very helpful for me to have somebody out there like that.
Yes, I've been surprised by how much I love Dan Rather, and I never did before.
Me too.
I'm like, you go, Dan Rather, you go and you say those things, because you are old and you know.
Exactly. Him and Robert Reich as well has been a very informative person for me to listen to as well.
Yeah, when you get the elders fired up, you have gotten some, you have some shit to worry about.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I can remember back in when I was actually majored in history, and I was at Long Beach State, and one of my professors at the time, it was in a political science class, he was all fired up, and we were not. It was what, probably, I don't know, the very late 90s, I'm aging myself now, but I think late 90s. And everybody was pretty complacent because we were all pretty good, right? And he was telling us about protests that had gone on during, I think it was Vietnam, and he was on campus as a student at that time. And he was saying that, you know, when, you know, you guys are going to get fired up, and I know it's coming, and all these things. And I remember looking at him going, I have no idea what you're talking about. We're good, you know? And I look back now, and I see that he was talking about what's happening now. And I can remember back to that moment being prepared for, like, I can't imagine us having any need to step out and speak out. And it is those people like Robert Reich, Dan Rather, my professor, who have wisdom and who we can draw upon and be inspired by. And I think that's exciting.
Yes. I remember being jealous of the people who got to do a protest in the 60s because they had shit to worry about. And now I am maybe
Me
not so
too.
Jealous, but we we have our 60s moment.
Yeah, you know, totally. In fact, when I was at the Women's March, one of the things I thought about was, you know, that I've never done this before. I've never marched. I've never had a need to march. There are the things of, like, what size sign should I have? You know, should I put a handle on it? I mean, what are we going to do? Are we going to – all the little, you know, little things. And realizing that I had the privilege for all those years to not have needed to step out in March, or at least not have noticed that I should have been doing so. And really, you know, like it's a very eye-opening moment to kind of remove the shades and look around and go, oh, okay, this is the moment. This is our history is right now, and we need to step out in it and show who we are.
Yes, to be on the right side of history is no easy task, but I think we can do it.
I think so too.
And you, lady, where do we, where do the lovely humans listening find you when they have inevitably fallen in love with you? Where do they get more of the Natalie Moser?
Thank you, Kristen. Well, they can find me sometimes on my yoga website and my blog there, which is www.pranabundance.com. PranaBundance.com /blog. And I don't write there all the time, but I hope to be adding more there. And I am adding some items on Medium as well for under Natalie Moser. And I intend to be writing actually a book as well, kind of on my cancer experience and, you know, perhaps just on how we can step forward in times of challenge and find the beauty and opportunity in those moments. So look out for something in the near future from that as well.
Awesome. And then any projects we should know about? I want to know more about your librarian's group of goodness
yes.
and wonders.
Yes. So, some of these things are still in the hopper, but one of the things that we're looking to do is I noticed a couple of people in my groups on Facebook that I'm friends with as well, who were really upset by everything. And one thing that I realized is that I really want to make sure, if we are in times of challenge and despair, what can we do to move forward from that? That is to take action. So in knowing that, for me, one of my primary values is educating and moving forward from with valid information, and also from a place of hopefully strong parenting, I was trying to think, how are people talking to their kids right now? And can we help them in that conversation through the use of, you know, books and literature? And I have some friends who are librarians, and so I reached out to them and kind of put together an idea for a project where we were curating books that, you know, have to do with particular subjects like social justice, the environment, science, women in these things, equality, all of these different very important categories. They are currently working on categorizing books like this, annotating them, and we're working to create a website, ultimately probably a little book club, and notes on how parents, or what parents can talk about with their kids with these books, and how we can develop a conversation with our children so that way they are truly committed to you know, all these subjects, and not just to repeating what we have to say about them. So that's one of the big things, and we're calling it Still We Rise. And so look for that eventually. And I'm also hoping with that to develop other things from it, possibly local community groups where we can really rise up together in person as well, trying to find all that connects us and talk about the things that do not.
Beautiful. I like all of those things very much. I wanted to close our time together with a poem, if that's okay. But first,
I would love that.
Are there any questions? Good. Are there any questions that you wish I had asked but didn't? Like, you need to shut up.
I walked away from my computer because my phone was ringing. Let me see if I have anything else on here. I think that is probably pretty good. Let's see. I think that's probably good.
Cool. Then I must admit that I was doing my Krista Tippett duty and stopping your blog to make sure that I had covered some shit. And I happened across this poem on your blog, The Fourth Sign of the Zodiac, Part 3 by Mary Oliver. So
my favorite.
So here it is. Mary Oliver, who's on Being, is the very best.
Mm-hmm.
Her interview there. I know you never intended to be in this world, but you're in it all the same. So why not get started immediately? I mean, belonging to it. There is so much to admire, to weep over, and to write music or poems about. Bless the feet that take you to and fro. Bless the eyes and the listening ears. Bless the tongue, the marvel of taste. Bless touching. You could live 100 years, it's happened, or not. I am speaking from the fortunate platform of many years, none of which, I think, I ever wasted. Do you need a prod? Do you need a little darkness to get you going? Let us be as urgent as a knife, then, and remind you of Keats, so single of purpose and thinking, for a while, he had a lifetime.
Mm. Beautiful.
As are you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Natalie Moser, everyone. She's a wonder. Google the shit out of her. Love upon her. Thank you for listening to this episode of That's What She Said.
Thank you, Kristen.
You're so very welcome.